Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 162 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and joining me for first time in a couple weeks, but not that long, frankly, the great Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
What's up, Brad? Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, sir. Just as a quick explanation, we're recording this on Friday night, which was not expected. I honestly had sort of a slip of the mind and realized Friday afternoon that I wasn't going to have any time to record on either Saturday or Sunday for Easter reasons and other reasons. So Scott is graciously joining me late night on this Friday. And as a programming note, if you also like to listen to the Road to Atlanta podcast, which is going to be on this feed as always, they recorded today earlier, but they're actually going to save that pod for Sunday and sort of have our time slot. So we're going to flip-flop. We're going to go first and be a little bit more time sensitive based on this week of action, whereas Road to Atlanta will be less time sensitive, so they're going to go a bit later. So no big deal. We'll both have podcast content in the next 48 hours or so. But it is Friday night, and just keep that in mind as we talk about everything throughout this podcast. So Scott, it wasn't the greatest week for the Braves, who since Eric and I recorded last, they're 0-3. They didn't play Monday and they didn't play today because it got rained out. So only three games and a three game sweep. We'll talk more about the games in a minute specifically, but not ideal, especially after the movement. Everything was going great and then it suddenly wasn't anymore.
Everything was good, man. We had Tiger Woods. I mean, ever since Tiger won the Masters, it's all been pretty downhill. I mean, we a week ago we were talking about the Acuna and Ozzie extensions, and they win the final two against the Mets after losing the first two, and that was encouraging. But yeah, to get swept at home by a rebuilding-ish Diamondbacks team, especially the way that they did, and then to lose Aroldis Vizcaino for the year, which I know we're going to touch on here in a minute, is just a bad 4 or 5 day stretch for the team.
Yeah, I mean, I want to tap into your Arizona Diamondbacks knowledge here later, because that is your local team, not the team that you follow the closest, I guess, but your local team. So you are definitely more plugged in with them than most. But we'll come back to that momentarily. You mentioned Aroldis Vizcaino. That happened this week. He's now out for the season with a shoulder injury. Specifically, this wasn't a huge surprise given the fact that he had not been used a ton, and there was always whispers about his shoulder. Going back to the offseason, Mark Bowman, I'll credit him big time for this, sort of planted his flag and saying that there were a lot of discussions about not tendering Vizcaino at all, which is kind of a surprise in the moment, but Bowman nailed this one because of the shoulder weirdness. And, you know, he wasn't like he was terrible when he pitched this year, but there was always some weirdness. He just he wasn't pitching very often. He wasn't available, et cetera, et cetera. And that uncertainty is now a full season absence after just four innings of work. So we'll talk about what Alex Anthopoulos had to say after the injury was announced, but it's just sort of practically here. It's a pretty big loss because Vizcaino, while never super consistently available, when he was available to pitch, has normally been pretty good, and the Braves can use all the help they can get right now in the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, you look back at this offseason, and there's things that happened, and there were some moves and decisions that were questioned. And for me, I truly cannot figure out what the Braves were thinking when they guaranteed Viz $5 million. And they didn't just guarantee him at once, but twice. I mean, they could have cut bait with him in the first or second week of the spring before the midway point or whatever it was in games, and been on the hook for like $500,000 or whatever 10% of his salary was. And they still kept him. They knew that his shoulder was jacked up. He barely pitched in the spring. You mentioned he appeared in four games through four innings. This is a guy who threw 38 innings last year, has only thrown more than 40 innings once in his entire career. That was in 2017. So for a team that was, as you know, listeners know well, for a team that was so cash-strapped this winter and decided not to spend, I just don't know what the front office was thinking when you guarantee $5 million when it was a buyer's market for relievers this winter, you could have added two legitimately pretty good late inning middle relievers for the same money that you're paying Viz to throw four innings and now be out for the rest of the year. So I was dumbfounded by it then, and obviously missing the rest of the season because he has been pretty he's been decent whenever he is healthy. But with the shoulder concerns, I really just didn't understand this. I get maybe that you don't give up on him in the middle of the winter and see if he shows up in the spring and if his shoulder's better. But the fact that it sounds like his shoulder was already barking right by the time he showed up to camp for them to guarantee him his money by keeping him on the opening day roster was really just kind of a baffling decision all the way around.
Yeah, it just doesn't, you know, in retrospect now, it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback on this stuff and talk about this, but it was discussed ahead of time, which is why, you know, I made sure to note what Bowman was reporting over the offseason. This is not a new problem. There was some, you know, I tweeted about this a little bit. People were tweeting about this, and sort of the people that like to defend the Braves kind of blindly were just saying, look, they could have known he was hurt. I'm like, well, yeah, they could have. They pretty much did know that he was hurt. If Bowman was reporting it, someone was telling Bowman that. There was no uncertainty here in terms of just whether it was going to be 100% or not. Like, this guy, you know, could have been healthy, and you have to assume that the Braves had some optimism about his shoulder at some point along the way, or they would not have tendered him the contract. They didn't have to do that. But that in concert with not doing anything else in the bullpen does not look good. And I mean, we kind of already talked about that a million times on this podcast. That was the thing that we talked about really all offseason. Like, we just kind of assumed that at some point along the way, they were going to spend some money in the bullpen because A, it would have been cheap, as you referenced, and B, the bullpen wasn't very good at times last year, and they kind of just brought the band back together, and it didn't ever make sense in any way. And, you know, it looks worse now when you factor in Vizcaino and the fact that Darren O'Day is nowhere to be found. Those two things, obviously the Braves have better medical information than we do, but the combination of all these factors just looks terrible for this Braves team, especially when you factor in that the bullpen has been pretty bad so far. We'll talk about that more later as we get into the games that happened this week. But yeah, man, I mean, it's just not – the optics are really bad. To combine the $5 million for Vizcaino to the fact that they spent no other money, and there was plenty of buzz out there that Vizcaino was going to be a pretty risky proposition. So it's just not a great look for anyone involved here. Obviously, it's not Vizcaino's fault. Like, you know, he takes the money and he's injured. It's not his fault that he's injured. That's what, you know, it's one of those things that I kind of wish the best for him. Obviously, you want guys to succeed, but it's just kind of brutal in every sense. Actually, our guys, Chris Willis and Eric Cole, were in the building when Anthopoulos was talking about this on the day of. And they passed along some quotes I'm going to read to you now from Anthopoulos. This is, you know, just hours later in the dugout, I think. And I'm quoting here. There's been a ton of turnover from the beginning of camp till now. We're going to do what we can to look both internally and externally. We'll try to do some things there, end quote, about the bullpen. And from there, another quote. If we find we are in a position to where we are comfortable with our starting depth, then maybe we can consider putting one of those guys in the bullpen, end quote, talking about the young starter. So looking ahead now, we'll talk again about the individual stuff that happened this week in a second, but this bullpen is bad, and everyone knows it. So is there an obvious – I mean, obviously, Kimbrel is the one that gets talked about a ton. I don't want to spend too much time on that just because it's a story we've been covering for months now, literally. But, you know, if it's – Kimbrel's the only player – available that's not on a team right now that isn't on your own roster that you could add. There's no like other free agents. It's Kimbrel or nothing on the free agent market. And after that, you're talking about your young guys in the minors who are pretty much starters. There are a couple of younger guys in the bullpen that could be interesting that they could call up along the way. But it's Kimbrel, it's those guys, or, you know, it's the same group that we've been looking at now. And the same group that we've been looking at now is just not going to cut it on a full season basis.
No, it's not. And, you know, I don't want to harp too much on last season, but you think about how the bullpen was in August and September last year. And it was a situation where Chad Sobotka, who had a horrible week, Chad Sobotka made his major league debut on like September 8th or something like that. And 3 or 4 weeks later, he was pitching in the eighth and ninth innings of the divisional series against the Dodgers. I mean, that's where this bullpen was at. So the fact that they just kind of said, well, everything will be fine, and they added, what, Josh Tomlin in the last week of the spring as a long man, and that was it. I just don't get it. I don't get it. But to your point, I mean, I guess if they want to put one of the young starters like Tukey or Fried in the bullpen, I guess you could if you want to turn them into like a multi-inning guy, though I'm just not super confident in Snit's ability to manage that, which with reason. He's been pretty terrible this year with the bullpen management, and some of it's not his fault. He can't throw strikes for these guys, but he's made some, we'll call it curious decisions so far. So I don't know what the solution is. I mean, as you said, Kimbrel is the only guy. This bullpen is more than just one pitcher away, and I'm certainly in favor of adding Kimbrel if the deal is right. But ultimately, it just comes back to they're in a lot of trouble here, and it's something that you and I and basically everybody else who follows the team saw coming. I just don't get it. I mean, it's a similar situation to last year when everyone knew how bad the bench was and they didn't add anything to the bench at the trade deadline. And then in the offseason, Anthopoulos was like, well, maybe I should have added to the bench at the trade deadline. Well, yeah, well, you know, what are you going to say about the bullpen now? Yeah, maybe we should have signed somebody when there were, you know, maybe 20 good, decent to good relievers out there who signed for less than $2 or $3 million. So I'm pretty dumbfounded, and it's a shame too, because as we sit here and the team is 9-9, which isn't bad by any means, they're a game and a half out from first place. There's just no reason for this bullpen to be as bad as it is, especially when you have a team that is trying to compete, or at least should be competing. They have a good lineup. The starting rotation has stabilized a bit. It's truly the bullpen that's the weak link here, and that's obviously costing them at least three games this past week and a couple other times too early in the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for us to talk about this in a new way, because we were kind of at the edge of this talking about the bullpen as a worry spot coming into the year and being perplexed about them not adding to it. And that was with a healthy, presumably healthy Vizcaino, and what we thought was going to be potentially an addition of Darren O'Day along the way. And that could happen at some point, but there's just been nothing about Darren O'Day. So you kind of have to assume he's not going to be a factor for a while, if nothing else. So this is not breaking ground for us. Obviously, this is bad news on the Vizcaino front, because he was at the very least one of the two best pitchers, presumably in the bullpen along with Minter. So that's a brutal loss. By the way, with a hat tip to the great Ben DeRonio, formerly of Talking Chop, now of 755 Battery Avenue, who tweeted this out this week. The Braves have the second worst bullpen, with only the Reds being worse since the start of the 2015 season in the major leagues. That's how bad the bullpen has been for 4+ years now. Now, granted, 2015 was individually terrible as a season for the Braves, and if you look a little bit more recently, the Braves are more like a bottom five bullpen or a bottom 6-7 bullpen. Regardless, it's very bad, and it has been bad for a while. Last year, there was an uptick. You know, famously, I know the broadcast was sort of spinning it in the way that they have to this week, and talking about the nice uptick last year when they had this great stretch of, you know, they couldn't throw strikes for a few months, and suddenly they had a really, really good, like, month, maybe 6 weeks, where they were really, really good. And that's conceivable, and listen, it's baseball. These guys are in the majors. They're not I mean, it's not impossible that the bullpen could be better. And obviously, they've been so bad so far, you know, 5.13 ERA, walking almost 5.5 guys per nine. Even this bullpen is going to be better than that, I think, on a full season basis. But better than that, it's not really the bar you're looking for when you're trying to compete and win the division, a loaded division, and trying to make a deep playoff run. This is not going to work. And we kind of know that. So quickly on what you were talking about with the young guys, you know, the guy that I find the most interesting, frankly, of all the young pitchers that's already been in the majors is probably Sean Newcomb. I know you mentioned Tukey and Fried. I think Fried's been so good in the starting rotation, he's going to be there until he's not good, because he's been awesome.
I agree.
He's pretty safe right now. Newcomb, we talked about this before on the podcast. I know you and I have, and Eric and I have. Newcomb is a guy whose stuff could be just filthy in the bullpen, and my leash is getting pretty short now with Sean Newcomb as a starter. And granted, you know, it's not like I'm not advocating for this openly at this point in time, but he'd be probably the first guy I tried there. But to what you were saying, I'd be using him as a multi-inning guy. You know, your Josh Hader types, your Andrew Miller types, maybe he could play up like that, and that wouldn't be a bad idea. But, you know, aside from that, I wouldn't be putting guys like Fried or Soroka or Tukey in the bullpen. Maybe you try Bryce Wilson. Maybe you go with Patrick Weigel, was an option people have been talking about as a guy who's been a little bit further away, but could potentially be in the bullpen right now, etc. So I don't know, man, there isn't a perfect solution. And we'll talk about how bad the bullpen was this week now as we transition a bit, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, I mean, I think with Newcomb, it's been presented before, and the concern was, well, you just don't know if he's going to throw strikes to be a reliable option out of the bullpen. Well, considering like all but one or two of the guys can't throw strikes in the bullpen right now. Other than like Wes Parsons and even like Josh Tomlin, who hasn't been terrible. I mean, who do you truly trust right now to come into the game and throw strikes?
Nobody.
No, I mean, for as bad as he was in the first weekend of the year, Luke Jackson is probably like number two on my reliever power rankings right now.
He's been much better quietly.
We were all ready to run him off
with good reason, I think, because he'd been DFA'd multiple times, but he's actually been one of the better guys the last couple weeks. So
yeah, and I mean, it's crazy to the point of I mean, that's where we're at, right? Where if Luke Jackson is probably your second best reliever in the bullpen right now, I mean, that is a legitimate problem. That's not, well, it's early, they'll be fine. He's your fifth starter and you can skip him, and you have young guys in AAA who you can replace in June. I mean, that's a legitimate problem. So I don't know. I'm with you. Newcomb is interesting. I think for a while now we've been concerned that he wouldn't throw enough strikes in the bullpen, but frankly, nobody's throwing strikes in the bullpen, so maybe he would find something if he knows he just goes out there for an inning or two and he's going to throw real hard. But yeah, just bad all the way around.
Yeah, and that's we'll leave the big picture stuff for now. We'll probably come back at some point. I do want to tell everybody to subscribe to this podcast. I don't mention that at the beginning of the pod, but Road to Atlanta is on the same feed as us. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Overcast, all those podcast players. We'll be back again in just a few seconds with more about the good old Atlanta Braves.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Scott, we're back. And let's just go day by day here. Kind of briefly, at least. Monday was an off day, as we referenced before. The one kind of breaking news that happened Monday was that Mike Foltynewicz is going to be pushed back a little bit more. They were looking to have him pitch potentially this weekend in Cleveland. That's not going to happen. He's going to throw one more time in Gwinnett because he was a little bit shaky in his last rehab start, which isn't anything to worry about too much, but they do need Mike Foltynewicz. And the other piece of news on the off day was that Johnny Venters went on the IL with a calf strain that drew a lot of ire and jokes because Johnny had been so bad.
Yeah.
Johnny had been so bad that you kind of have to maybe not flatly assume that they're making that one up, but it was a situation where the night before, I think Snicker or someone else in the organization said that they didn't know about any injury with Venters, and then just a few hours later he was going on the DL with what seems like a pretty on-brand Alex Anthopoulos made-up injury. We don't know that. Obviously, he could actually be hurt, but Johnny was not very good. So those two things happened Monday, neither of which were obviously ideal, even if Venters going on the IL isn't like the biggest deal in the world.
Yeah, I think with Folty, the fact that, as we mentioned, you have seen a little more consistency from the young pitchers, and Fried's throwing well, and you have Tukey, and if Brian Snicker's to be believed, that you're going to have Mike Soroka up for at least the foreseeable future, you have some options. So I don't think it's a dire situation. You want to get Folty right. You're also in a way kind of limiting his innings a little bit. So hopefully if the Braves are right there at the end of the year, you're not worried about him hitting a super high number or anything like that. So it's unfortunate about Johnny. I mean, you can just see the stuff is not very good. Even if he was only facing lefties, he hasn't been able to get lefties out. And then Snit has done him zero favors he brought in Venters to face Pete Alonso. I mean, what are you thinking there, dude?
It was not good.
criticize too much of Snit. I mean, he's certainly gets his fair share of flack on this podcast. So I don't want to beat up on him too much. Somebody has to throw, but ultimately, at this point, I think Johnny, you hope that he can get right. Even if he's just kind of a left-handed specialist, that's not the worst thing in the world. He's only getting paid I think, $2 million this year. So it's not a ton of money. He has such a great story and is so well-liked around the team that it's not the worst thing in the world if ideally he would be your lefty specialist and you're not relying on him for in big situations. So maybe he uses these couple weeks when he's on the IL to get right, throw some side sessions, maybe figure out something. Who knows what it is, if it's mechanically or just mental or if his stuff has fallen off a little bit. He's probably near the end of his career anyway, but it would be nice to see him get back and be able to be a contributing member of the bullpen, just given his history.
Yeah, I mean, Venter's ER, it's all small sample size theater, but his ERA is over 20 at this point. That's obviously not great. To your point, though, about his usage, just briefly here, he has faced 13 left-handed batters. The numbers are not very good, but they're not completely disastrous. The biggest problem is the four walks that he's given up in those 13 and those 13 batters. Against righties, he's faced five right-handed batters. He's given up three hits and a walk, two home runs, and six earned runs, and five batters.
Yikes.
So even if, you know, we're obviously going to be pretty charitable here. We all like Johnny Venters. He needs to face the lefties only. We said that on last week's podcast. It's not a situation where he can ever function against righties now, I think. He's definitely a pure loogie, and even then, you know, I don't want to go in too far, but the numbers look worse because he was facing right-handers. Pete Alonso was the most famous, but five batters face six earned runs against righties is kind of all you need to know about.
Yeah, that's a no-go. I mean, that's truly a bring him in to face a Bryce Harper for one batter, and you know that he is
the definition of a one batter loogie at this point. I think maybe if you get in, you know, situation where a couple of, you know, the opposition's big time guys are coming in the sixth inning and you have a short start, etc., it could be a perfect situation to use him. But yeah, we could probably leave that there for now. Okay, to some game stuff from this week, and again, only three games this last time we talked, because I know we're recording early, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, a sweep of losses at the hands of an inferior team, in my opinion, at least the Arizona Diamondbacks. They're not a terrible team by any means, but they shouldn't come into Atlanta and win all three games. Tuesday was interesting. You know, there were some bright spots. There was a Ronald Acuna bomb. There was a Freddie Freeman RBI double. There was a Johan Camargo bases clearing double to go up 5-2. And at that point in time, there was a lot of optimism, frankly, about the rest of the week even. And then the bullpen got a hold of things, and it was quite a meltdown. You mentioned Chad Sabaka earlier. He had a really rough performance. He had a hit-by-pitch, and a walk in a row to open the seventh inning. And then Jesse Biddle got beat up a little bit. Then Luke Jackson probably gave up an RBI single and RBI ground out to lose a three-run lead in a hurry. And then after that, later on, A.J. Minter came in a tie game and kind of imploded. It was second pitch that he threw was a home run, and the Rays ended up getting down by 9-6 margin. So all the details don't really matter that much. The bullpen, though, took a 5-2 lead and turned it into a 9-6 loss. And that kind of speaks for itself in some ways. But if you want to be more positive, the offense was pretty good in that game, and Max Free was really good again. The offense kind of disappeared the last two games, but if you want to take some solace in anything this week, it was probably Tuesday. It was the starting pitching the whole week, but Tuesday's offense was actually pretty good.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the lineup has not been the problem through the first 3 weeks or so of the season. I mean, it's really been pretty good. I know that a number that we were looking at was just how good of at-bats Braves hitters are putting together, and I think they have – I think Ronald Acuna is number two in baseball, at least he was as of yesterday, in pitches per plate appearance. I think Josh Donaldson was in the top 15. Dansby was in the top 20. So the Braves lineup has not been the problem. I know the bats went a little quiet on Thursday, though that might have been a little bit more of a getaway day, blues and all that. But alas, what can you do? So, yeah, I mean, again, to lose Tuesday's game with the bullpen, I mean, the Braves, even after the bullpen gave up the 5-2 lead, Ozzie comes in and hits a solo homer to like two pitches in. Yeah, and you think, okay, they'll be fine. You know, Diamondbacks bullpen is actually pretty decent. So considering the rest of their team, they have some good hard throwers in there. So to lose that way and was frustrating to say the least, especially when they had just won two pretty good games against the Mets. So just a disastrous loss, and then you hope, well, at least it's the first game of the series. You hope that you can kind of right the ship on Wednesday and Thursday, and obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah, to your point about the offense, you know, we'll talk about it in a second, but Wednesday and Thursday were not great from the offense. It kind of went silent a little bit, only three runs in two games. But even with that said, This is as of Friday morning, but the Braves were currently second in the majors in on-base percentage overall at 360, which is awesome. And then a 111 WRC plus as a team, which is in a tie for eighth in Major League Baseball. So the offense, to your point again, has not been a problem at all. And if you factor in defense, the Braves position players have actually been, I'm looking at now, number four overall in Major League Baseball because the defense is so good. So that has not been an issue. The pitching has been much more of an issue than the offense and the position players have been. And a lot of that's the bullpen, as we talked about. I guess moving forward, Wednesday was kind of a maddening loss in some ways. The offense did not do what it was supposed to do. Only had two runs and some bad player appearances in some big spots. But I had the honor of covering that game on TalkingChop.com, and I kind of used probably a bad headline in some ways. But Jesse Biddle had a rough night. I felt bad for him. I think we all did. Frankly, it was frustrating as people that want the Braves to do well. But Biddle had kind of given an interview after Tuesday night's game about how it wouldn't happen again with the bullpen, and then he was the one that gave up everything. And on Wednesday, he had three walks and his own personal error in a one-inning game to go from a tie game to a loss. And the rest of the bullpen was actually okay in that game. It was kind of only Biddle, but I felt bad for him. But it was kind of a maddening loss because for the first time in a while, the offense didn't really get it done, and then the bullpen again wastes another quality start because Kevin Gausman was awesome on Wednesday for the most part.
That was his best start as a Brave.
Yeah, 10 strikeouts. I mean, he gave up two runs, but it wasn't like he was getting batted around quite a bit. It was kind of an unlucky two runs, and 10 strikeouts speaks for itself. So to lose that one on the heels of Tuesday probably felt worse. You know, in a vacuum, you get one batting from a reliever. It's not the end of the world, but I think just combining that with Tuesday's game made a lot of people more angry than they probably would have been.
Yeah, and like you said, you feel for Jesse Biddle. He said after Tuesday's game that this would never happen again, and he wasn't gonna, was gonna be the end of the struggles. And then obviously you could say, I mean, he was visibly frustrated, and I get it. I mean, no one wants to be more successful than the players, it's their livelihood, and you, especially in a job like a bullpen job, where if you have a couple bad starts, all of a sudden you might be out of a job. So. It was interesting. It was a post-game comment. I think it was in Mark Bowman's game story that the Diamondbacks even acknowledged that there's the scouting report on Jesse Biddle is that he kind of has like the yips and the shakes whenever he has to feel the ball.
I didn't see that.
They asked, I think it was LeCastro who put down the bunt when Biddle threw it. Like he threw it like 20 feet wide.
It was a really bad throw. Yeah,
it was like horrible.
Jarringly bad.
You would think he would have maybe slipped or something, but he was just – even I don't know who had the quote, but they asked, and even the Diamondbacks player confirmed. He's like, yeah, that's the scouting report on him, is if you drop down a bunt or if you put something in play and he has to field it, he doesn't field the ball well. So that was interesting. I wonder if other teams are going to take advantage of that. I've never really necessarily heard of a player just confirming like, yeah, the guy can't field bunts, so that's why we did it. So it was a little bit of an interesting quote. I do think the big takeaway, though, if you're looking at a positive light, is how good Kevin Gausman was. I think it was somebody at The Athletic said that it was the hardest he's thrown in like a year and a half, which we, of course, heard last year about the shoulder tendonitis and his velocity was down. So, I mean, I think his fastball sat at like 94 miles an hour, 94 and a half. So that's a great sign. It was being located well. The split was working really well. So, again, the result wasn't great, and he did give up a couple of runs late. But all in all, he was really impressive, and if he's able to even come close to doing what he did there, he's going to be a really serviceable mid-rotation guy.
Yeah, that was a really encouraging start in a lot of ways. We can go to Thursday now briefly. Mike Soroka was his debut for the season. He had been really good in Gwinnett, and carry that over to this game. Had some trouble that he dealt with during the start. It wasn't like it was a spotless outing, but wiggled out of some jams and overall pitched pretty well. And as I think I referenced before, a third straight quality pitching performance from a starter that was blown later because the offense didn't score. Only one run on Thursday, and then the bullpen had a three-run blow-up again. Again, this is not a situation where the offense was without blame. I got some flack on Wednesday, I think Wednesday or Thursday, one of those two. People that were like, well, the bullpen can't do everything. I'm like, yeah, I understand that they didn't score runs in those games, but the bullpen allowed three runs. after a quality start. So, you know, in four, was it three innings or four innings? One of those two. Regardless, that's a bad bullpen performance. Once again, it isn't always the bullpen. And I would say it certainly wasn't only the bullpen on Wednesday and Thursday, but that is not that's sort of a separate thing than saying that they were good, because, you know, the difference is between the game being competitive when Freeman homers and the game not being competitive was three runs allowed by the bullpen again.
Yeah, you're right. And Soroka did look really good. He kind of got he was a little unlucky early on. It seemed like every ball the Diamondbacks were hitting was finding a hole, but settled in, gave up a first inning run, and then was pretty steady after that. Fastball looked good. He was throwing hard. I thought one thing that was interesting, somewhat, and granted, again, it's just one start, and I don't know the Diamondbacks' tendencies and how they hit, you know, versus breaking balls or fastballs or whatever it may be. But it was interesting. They said that he threw a bunch of sliders, way more than what he threw last year. I think they said he threw something like 35 sliders of his 90 pitches, which is a pretty healthy percentage, especially for a guy who has been dealing with some shoulder stuff, compared to last year where he was only throwing sliders, I think, like 15% of the time. So that was interesting. The fastball velo looked good. He was throwing more changeups too. He wasn't throwing as many fastballs, but when he was, they were coming in harder than what they were last year. So again, it sounds like at least for the interim, you're going to have Soroka up, and who knows where he's going to go. I think it's pretty clear at this point, like, there's no real need for him to be in Gwinnett. He's no. Clearly good. Anytime he goes to Gwinnett, it seems like he's working on a perfect game.
Yeah, he is a flat out major league starter. The only issue with Soroka is health at this point. Like, everyone kind of agrees, from analysts to reporters to people on the team. It was kind of an immediate, yeah, he'll be up again for the next start. Like, no one even debated it. It wasn't like they didn't even the fake conversation. Soroka is in the rotation unless he's not healthy. That's kind of it right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, you talk about him. He should. I mean, he's poised. I mean, even early on, you know, you could see where allowing, I think, the first three hitters of the game got a hit against him, or the second, third, and fourth hitters of the game got a hit against him, whatever it was. I mean, you could easily get rattled. You're one star, you're amped up, and all of a sudden you're in trouble. And before you know it, you're in a 3-0, 4-0 hole. And instead, I think he struck out a hitter and then worked out of it with a pop-up. So he's very good. It's, what is he, 22? I mean, the Braves, again, you talk about all these young pitchers, and if Tukey can continue it, if you get Fulte back, you get Gausman back. I mean, this team has – it's different. I mean, everyone kind of has the sour taste in their mouth when they had to throw Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson into the Wolves on opening week in Philly, which was just a horrible situation all the way around. I think this rotation has a chance to be one of maybe a top five, top six group in the National League moving forward once they get Fulte back, and assuming people stay healthy. It's just, of course, getting some consistency – with the lineup, and then somehow, I don't know what the solution is. I don't think anyone does, but trying to fix this bullpen to a point where you at least aren't cringing whenever the starter comes out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I was not super enthused by the rotation early on in the year and during the offseason just because of the uncertainty level, but the upside was always kind of there. And if you throw in Soroka, we'll see what Tukey looks like, because he's going to pitch his first start. I know he kind of had a starting kind of role in his last outing because he pitched so long, but his first official start will be on Saturday in the doubleheader. So you throw in those two guys with Fulte coming back, and with the way that Gausman and Fried have looked, you suddenly have a pretty intriguing group with some depth, of course, as well. So that is probably the single most positive thing from this week, is the starting pitching performances of three straight guys. The Braves going 0-3 in those three starts is really brutal in some ways, in a small sample kind of thing. But big picture, getting those kind of performances is awesome. So more of that, please, if you are the Atlanta Braves. Quickly looking ahead the rest of the week, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into this because I know people are going to listen to this a little bit later probably because it's not our normal schedule. But a Friday rainout happened, leaving a doubleheader we scheduled for Saturday with Julio Teheran in Game 1 and Tukey in Game 2. I'll be more interested to watch Game 2 than Game 1, with all due respect to Julio Teheran. You know, that, and then Sunday, you know, we'll see if they get all three of these games in. But anything stand out to you, anything you're looking for other than just Tukey? Because I think Tukey's the one everybody's going to kind of circle. But it would be nice to see the Braves get right a little bit. We'll see how Julio fares on the road in this spot.
Yeah, I think if you're going to catch the Indians, I mean, now there's a chance that they're going to get Francisco Lindor back this weekend. He's been on a rehab assignment. I think he's only played one game, though, because of rain. So who knows if they're going to bring him back. I know it was reported that he might be back this weekend, though, with the wet conditions and a calf injury, I'm not sure. But, you know, the Indians are obviously a good team. They've won the division the last 3 or 4 years. They have some crazy pitching talent. You mentioned game one is Corey Kluber. Game two is Trevor Bauer, who is probably the best pitcher in the American League right now. I mean, the dude
he's
just
right
ridiculous.
Now.
Just a crazy good pitcher. And then Shane Bieber is the Sunday night starter for who's pitching for the Braves on Sunday night?
Ooh, I had this in front of me.
Is that Freed?
I think it might be Freed again. Let me make sure. But yeah, because it was supposed to be, I think that shuffled because of Faulty, and that was the original scheduling that I had in front of me, and now I'm looking it up.
Freed.
This is great radio. Yeah, Freed. And it's ESPN, by the way. It's another night game, which is crazy to see how many times early in the year the Braves are on Sunday Night Baseball, but here they are again.
Yeah, so you get, you know, two really good young pitchers with Bieber, who's a fantastic pitcher. If you haven't had a chance to see him pitch, he's really, really good. Kind of like a Mike Soroka, honestly, is kind of his repertoire guy who pitches beyond his years and commands well. So three really good starting pitchers. Corey Kluber's been not as good this year as in recent years, but, you know, it's a real challenge. The Indians are a good team, even with their injuries. They still have a pretty good lineup with Jose Ramirez and Carlos Santana's there. So it's going to be a challenge. Hopefully the weather cooperates because the last thing they need is a couple more rain delays. But even if, you know, it'd be fantastic if they could get out of Cleveland with 2 out of 3 wins, even one win, considering the pitching they're going to see wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I think in general, the Indians are not as good as people think that they are, just because their division is so bad and they didn't spend money. By the way, you know, they're sort of the parallel for the Braves right now, and that their fan base, like, borderline revolted. I know a lot of Cleveland fans from my NBA dealings, and the Indians were, like, comically not spending money and, like, pretty open about it. Like, the Braves kind of just did their thing and talked around it. The Indians were like, no, we're not going to spend because we don't need to spend. It was, like, kind of a hilarious put it back in the face of your fans, because they know they can win the division without spending, and that was kind of brutal. Like, I guess I could see both sides, because the Indians are comfortably still the best team in that division, so you can excuse it a little bit more. But if you're the Indians, you kind of have, you probably want to have World Series aspirations. Whereas the Braves had to get better to win the division, and the Indians didn't have that. So there's a parallel there, all kinds of stuff. And from what we just sort of uncovered, I wasn't even realized about Sunday, pitching matchups are actually going to be a lot of fun. Like, the worst one is the one that involves Julio. Again, with all respect, we kind of just know what he is. But, you know, Corey Kluber, and, you know, there's a lot of intrigue over the weekend. So no Masters, people could sort of dive in now that, you know, all the craziness is, you know, no Final Four, no Masters the last 2 weekends. It's a Braves weekend, so dive in.
And Braves weekend NBA playoffs, I know you're excited about those.
Oh yeah, I've been watching as we've been discussing. So
hockey playoffs, I'm all in on hockey.
You cover hockey, I'll cover the NBA. We'll call it a day, Scott. No, playoff hockey is enjoyable. I actually kind of like playoff hockey. It's just I don't have time to watch it until the end, because I'm just watching so much basketball. But I do like it.
Yeah, no, it's a good. April's a great time. You mentioned Masters, baseball, the draft is next weekend for football, hockey playoffs, basketball play. I mean, it's a good time of year.
Yeah, it is, and it'd be nice. I know this is probably sort of a negative podcast overall, but. We have that reputation, but this week I think you kind of have to talk a little bit critically, because they lost all 3 games and their second best reliever or best reliever got hurt for the season. So not a ton to be positive about on the pod, and we're recording early. So hopefully that means the Braves will go out and sweep, and we'll have plenty more positive stuff to talk about next time we gather on this particular podcast. But Scott, anything else that we haven't covered that you want to get out there? And if not, please tell people where they can find your work, as always, because while the movement has kind of cooled, Tiger's still everywhere, including on the MLB official account, which is absolute insanity. By the way, that happened last Sunday. When Eric and I'm not sure if you heard this on the podcast, but Eric and I were recording when the MLB account officially tweeted out for the first time. We both kind of lost it on the podcast.
Yeah, like, no, it was great. Cracking up. I wish you could have phoned me in or something like that for 5 minutes just to celebrate it. Yeah. No, I mean, it's been, I don't know. I think just going back to the bad week, I mean, yeah, it wasn't great, but you're going to have bad stretches. I mean, everything, we're still, what is it? April 19th today.
They've played 18 games, which is like 9% of the season or something like
and
that.
I looked 11%. It up after, they're 9-9 at this point. Last year, they were 10-8. So they are one game worse this year than they were last year, just for some perspective. Now, again, we're not going to act like the division isn't much better and the rest of the league isn't better, you know, so on and so forth. But, you know, everything gets magnified in April. I mean, anything before, honestly, Memorial Day seems kind of silly to put like a ton of stock in. Now, there's things that are encouraging, like, you know, Dansby's had a great year so far. And, you know, you think there's a chance for guys like Donaldson to get better and Acuna's been so good and so on. But, you know, it's still early. It doesn't seem like that in the moment because every game is important this year with how good the division is. But again, we're 18 games in. What is that, like 11% of the season or something like that?
11.1%. Yep, it's one out of nine, essentially. So
how about that for some math? Yeah, so, you know, it's the equivalent of, we're in the midway point between week one and week two of the NFL season is basically where we're at when you think about that.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so, but no, as always, check the site. The minor league recaps are a lot of fun. And of course, all the news. I don't know, maybe we'll get another extension this week. Probably not. we're probably good with Acuna and Ozzie. I guess like Dansby maybe wants to get in on the fun, but we'll see. But as always, check out the site and on Twitter at ScottColeman55.
Yep, and even as we're talking about this stuff now, at worst, at the end of tonight, the Braves will still be, I believe, in third. I'm looking up Washington played earlier. So yeah, the Braves at worst. At the end of tonight's recording, we'll be in third place and very much within striking distance of the Phillies and the Mets. So fortunately, like, nobody's like 14-3 or something coming out of the gate. So the Braves are just fine. No worries. 9-9. Long way to go. And we'll talk about it throughout the season. Please subscribe to this podcast. Check out Road to Atlanta coming in a couple days. Probably going to drop on Sunday at some point. And we'll see everybody very, very soon.